Well, Schiltzy, I believe it is the two ordinary cops.
It is, mate. Yep, very ordinary.
We're back again. We are back. So, last time, a bit of a recap on the last one, because it flowed in quite nicely to what we're going to talk about today. And we spoke about leadership.
Yep.
And we spoke about the leadership early on, and then, you know, as we grew through our time in the police and becoming leaders ourselves and sort of how that's done well, and then we sort of, you know, rolled over a little bit the strategic level, where like the bosses at the executive level, their leadership style is more to do with strategic direction and SOPs and things like that.
Yep.
So we finished that last one talking about how domestic violence, basically touching on how police deal with lots and lots of domestic violence. And it got us thinking that there's a perception in society of what domestic violence is, and then there's what the police sort of deal with day in, day out. And I think we should clarify the difference a little bit.
Yep.
So to put it in perspective, we've got to go back to probably the late 80s, early 90s, where domestic violence was always around, but it was treated like any other crime. The police would attend, we'll just go the male-female version because it just works. So mum has been beaten up by dad, for example, but mum doesn't want to make a complaint. Well, that's the end of that. Yep. It used to be written off by just saying it's just a domestic and they'd move on. There were a number of coronials that happened in the 90s and into the 2000s where coroners were critical of police response to that and said there needs to be more, and governments in general, there needs to be more done to protect these victims because there's a reason they're not giving statements. It's for whatever reason they're protecting their husband. And there's a lot more research has been done into this, yep, into why that happens. Anyway, we're not really going into that. We're talking about the police response to it. So, born out of that, I think most jurisdictions in the Western world came out with domestic violence-related legislation and training to police about bringing in, at that point, domestic violence orders,
yep,
or basically a separate order that forces certain behaviour onto the person who's called the... what are they called? The applicant and the subject, or the subject, yeah, of the domestic, yeah, violence order. So, basically... that evolved into what we've got now, where there's very, very strict rules for how police need to respond and very strict reporting protocols around domestic violence. So what's happened now is that, and not so much now, but even in it, when we started in 2007, it was not long after quite a bad homicide took place in Darwin,
yep,
where police had attended a matter and then left without properly dealing with the matter to attend something else, and the man went on to murder his wife. He killed that lady who'd just been in police contact. Out of that coronial was born, at that point, was called the Violent Crime Reduction Strategy.
Yep.
And that really stringent reporting came in around that. And from there, it evolved, and the legislation has also evolved. We don't really need to go right into that, but what, yep, we do need to point out is that domestics now are very, very onerous. So, with that in mind, there is a definition within the Domestic Violence Act, that Domestic and Family Violence Act, that says that it defines what a domestic relationship is. And, yep, it's, without going into it, it's very, very broad. Basically, if you live with someone for long enough, you're in a domestic relationship,
yep,
which enlivens the requirement to do all that reporting and to do lots and lots of paperwork, and it just bogs you. It completely bogs the police down. Now, I'm not taking away from legitimate. I'm not minimalizing domestic violence. I just want people to understand that this is why there's so much response. So an example is, and we've been to a few jobs like this, where we get called to a job. This is as a GD, yep, copper, so anywhere in the territory, really, or Australia-wide. You go to a job. There's been a verbal argument between two where there might have been threats made. The domestic relationship has been ticked.
Yep.
Yes, correct. We need to know the link between them, so link the relationship type, how it is. And then from there, you either have to take out an order if there is enough evidence or information to support an order or charges or whatever, like anything like that.
Yep.
But the trouble is now there's a real push for an order to be taken out. And I know we've sort of spoken about it before where that wasn't really justified. Where what happened was, domestics started being handed out like confetti. And, yep, I think that's what we were talking about, the leadership in the last podcast.
Yeah.
What happened, especially in places like Alice Springs, was people would go to jobs, domestics, like 15 a shift, like lots and lots of jobs that completely bog you. And they'd respond in what I call a third gear response. And that, yep, was learned because what would happen was there was a requirement to respond a certain way, but then as in you must do a minimal amount at a domestic, but a lot of the time they would be pushed heavily by our senior members who are reviewing these matters, who are also held to account.
Yep.
And the pressure was to take out an order.
Yep.
So that created the problem in my view that what's happened now is the police were handing them out too much, and, and that there was just, it was the easier to hand out an order.
Yep.
Now, the problem with an order is it has a lot of ramifications. You know, if you've got stuff to lose, you'll lose stuff by having a domestic violence order. Now, obviously, you're completely aware of this.
Yep.
Also born out of the original days of the DV side of things were domestic violence units.
Yep.
So do you just want to go into what happened with you in King Catherine in the early days with the DV unit, your role?
Yeah, well, I mean, I went in there, would have been 2010. And like basically what you're doing is you're more serious domestics. Like, you know, police are going to domestics so many times a day, you know, and so we would take the more serious ones where we had the time and resources so we could actually look into, I suppose, investigating more heavily and making sure we got successful prosecutions and also reviewing domestic violence. So any incident, I mean, there was one stage later on that I was reviewing over 100 a week domestic violence jobs in Catherine, and which is fairly onerous.
Yeah.
You got to go through, and I had to put a report on each one. Yeah, so it's yeah, it's very busy days, that's for sure. But they also, we were a little bit unique in the way they also had a peace at home program.
Yep.
So that was put in place, I think it was 2008 or something like that. And I think actually Ranky was in charge of organising that, Scott Ranky. And basically that involved working with Family and Children's Services. So we had two of those officers in our office with us. And it was trying to, so if there's kids involved in a, like, and the mother and father are fighting, what it was more designed to do was actually give them the resources or, you know, organisations they could go to help them stop fighting. So it was more of a, I suppose,
social work
sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was more preventative, so it never happened again. Unfortunately, it wasn't overly successful. And we can go into the complexities later of relationships. And, I mean, most people would know as soon as emotion's involved, it's very difficult to try and change one's behaviour, you know, and especially when they've got to that stage where they're arguing all the time.
Yep.
It's very hard to bring it back, and it takes a lot of discipline, mainly from them, to do that. But, I mean, it's domestics are probably one of the... I mean, yeah, they're definitely one of the worst jobs you can go to, I think.
Yeah.
Especially, like, there's times where, you know, you will go in and you go to the arrest, the man, and even though they've been fighting and, you know, hitting each other and all that sort of thing, the woman will come and attack the police for taking the man away.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah, it's extremely complex. It's, and I think, well... I mean, we need to structure this because we've already talked about DV in a thing, and the problem is we've got to do it in a way that people can understand.
Yeah.
So it's a chronology of events, so to speak.
Yeah, so I reckon we'll break it down. People react. So there's been a couple of really, really bad domestic violence incidents that made media where there's been a very brutal homicide. The one that comes to mind is the Hannah Clark, Hannah Baxter, homicide in Brisbane, where her husband came back and in a jealous rage for whatever. I don't know the details exactly of the job, but long story short, he horrifically burnt his kids and his wife to death in a car in Brisbane. Now, there was outrage when it came to the attention of the media that police had involvement with them. And a lot of the outrage was unjustified. It was like, well, hang on, how did the police not foresee that this was going to occur?
Yeah.
And they'll say, but obviously, it was very obvious that this was a big pattern of controlling behaviours and lots of police attendance. Well, I've been to hundreds of those jobs.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. I could give you hundreds of people who I think are capable of killing their partner, male and female.
Yeah.
But a lot of them don't. And the trouble is you can't arrest somebody for something you think they might do.
Yeah.
So... that's where a lot of the outrage comes. Oh, how did they not see this? I think what we need to portray to everyone is that DV is so bloody common. All jurisdictions, like I'm now living in northern New South Wales, and I was speaking to the police in Coffs Harbour and in Dorrigo, actually, saying how they log onto the computer or log onto their radio and basically want to do things around Dorrigo. And they get sent straight to Coffs Harbour to go to domestic after domestic after domestic.
Yep.
And a lot of them are arguments that, obviously the people, for whatever reason, they can't seem to solve their own problems. So they call the police. And the vast majority of the jobs you go to, they're not low. They are low end in that no one's been beaten badly or murdered or anything like that.
Yep.
But there's still been a disorder, a disturbance within the family structure or within the household.
Yep.
And as a result of that, there are orders taken out. There's a lot of onerous requirements by police. So I think it's really easy for people to criticise a police response without knowing the backside of it.
Exactly.
Yep. And I like to use this test because everyone can relate to this because most people's involvement with police is traffic.
Yep.
When was the last time, obviously there's going to be RBTs around, but when was the last time you saw an RBT?
Yeah.
I personally, when I first got my licence in Toowoomba as a young fella, I got breathalysed all the time.
Yep.
I haven't been breathalysed in years.
Mate, exactly the same here. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's that the policing has got to a point now where it's so onerous and the jobs are just so full on. Not that they're full on jobs, just there's so many of them that there is no proactive policing anymore.
Yep.
It's basically the only ones I do see proactively policing are highway patrol.
Yep.
And you don't see GDs. And I'm not saying they don't anywhere, but GDs just don't have time. They're going job to job. Even regional areas are being sent to major centres to create an extra van.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
for the sheer workload.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also important to note that what you mentioned before, you know, how do police allow this to happen and all this sort of stuff. And there's a lot of reporting, and you've got to understand that you're actually dealing with some people that aren't overly helpful in giving you evidence as well. So, you know, the amount of times I've taken a statement from a victim. And then they've wanted to recall it because they don't want him charged.
Yeah.
And so then you're between a rock and a hard place because, okay, well, we suddenly don't have evidence. You can't force her to give evidence against her husband.
No.
Or, you know, or boyfriend or whatever it is. So then you're really stuck. Unless you can get other witnesses to give an account, then you're basically stuffed.
Yeah, the trouble, I think, comes from that. Well, that's normally not an issue. It's like, we just don't have enough evidence.
That's right.
This matter's finished. The pressure comes in that it's a domestic.
Yes.
So there's a lot of pressure to act. And like I remember quite a few times, especially in places like Alice, I'd finalise a job, go, yeah, that's it. She doesn't want a complaint. We've got no other evidence.
Yeah.
There's already an order in place.
Yeah.
We've got no evidence of the breach.
Yep.
As in hard evidence. It's not what you know. It's what you can prove.
Exactly.
I've got no hard evidence that will withstand a prosecution.
Yep.
Therefore, there's nothing further I can do.
Yeah.
For that to come back, no, further investigation is required. It's like only because it's a domestic, if it was any other job, it would be gone at that point because, and remove the emotion. It has to be objective. You have to have the evidence to be able to do this.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's where it really gets muddy with domestic violence because there's pressure to act early. So if there's no order in place, there's a pressure to take out an order.
Yep.
If there is an order in place, well, there's no further need for an order.
That's right.
But then you need the points of proof to prove the breach.
That's right. Yeah.
So
exactly.
It's a tricky thing. The other thing with this, and you mentioned it before, there's a hell of a lot of emotion around domestics.
Yep.
I'll give you an example of a really full on situation that happened, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because it will identify the people. At a town in the Northern Territory, there was a successful businessman who got heavily involved in drugs, and the reason he got involved in methamphetamine was because he was becoming quite successful within his business and was going to a lot of events after hours and things like that. And he started saying to his friends, oh, I'm just so tired all the time. And he was probably in his 30s and successful at his business, building the small business. One of his mates said, oh, take a bit of this stuff, mate. It'll just keep you going. And it was ice. It was methamphetamine. Mm. Anyway, he did that and his business skyrocketed. He was doing really well. He had all the energy in the world.
Mm.
But the trouble is, as you know, the old saying I like to say, what goes up must come down.
That's right.
There's a reason methamphetamine is so bad. And it's probably because it's so good.
Yeah.
This is what they tell you. It's the best high you'll ever have and whatever. I've never touched it.
No.
Never will. But what happened was he started to get the manic, crazy behavior that comes with drug use. He broke up with his wife, took up with another young woman who was involved in the ice scene. And it culminated a little bit in a matter where he actually committed a robbery with a firearm of a person in the town who was a dealer.
Yep.
So he robbed drugs from the dealer at gunpoint.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was that, but there was also some very high level threats and some pretty bad things happening at home with his wife and kids. So the way I got involved was I was in the domestic violence unit at the time.
Yep.
And we got brought in to sort of assist with this. And what had happened was he would threaten, there'd been really bad things. She's come in and finally made a statement going, I need this dealt with. This guy has been threatening me with guns. He's broken up with me, essentially. He's going out with this other young girl who's 15 years younger than him and off her head on drugs and whatever else. It got to the point where we eventually got him. I managed to convince her to show me where the guns were. So she did that. They were sort of on and off again, like it was, you know, how domestics go.
Yeah.
So anyway, I arrested him. We arrested him. My team arrested him and we got him in. And I took out what's called the old full non-contact domestic violence order.
Yeah.
But the protected person wasn't just himself. It was also his kids. So I remember sitting down in the cell, in the room, and he was out of the cells and he was compliant. And I issued him the order. And I remember saying and explaining the order to him, going, right, you're not allowed to contact your wife. You're not allowed to contact your kids. And he goes, what do you mean, my kids? I said, there is a full non-contact domestic violence order between you and your children.
Mm.
There are no circumstances where you're allowed to have contact with your kids. He went from a compliant person to a completely non-compliant person. This is a person who's never assaulted police ever.
Yep.
He said, you are not taking my kids off me. I will kill you. You are not taking my kids away.
Yeah.
And I believed him. It was pretty. And then he started getting more and more agitated. I explained. I said, do you understand that? I said, you're not taking my effing kids off me. And it went off. He just built on that.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was also a methamphetamine user. So he was building in his emotion and getting more and more aggressive. We went to put him back in the cells. He still would not accept the fact that we'd given him this non-contact order. And he lost it. We ended up a very high level use of force in the as him just restrained on the ground, but he was so hard to contain.
Yep.
And it was drug fueled to a point, but it was more emotion fueled.
Yep.
So you think about it, you do anything for you. There's a reason we have the term mama bear, you know?
Yep.
When a parent is threatened with losing their children, the emotion becomes unbelievable and they'll do anything. And especially, there's jealousy and stuff like that with partners that also make very high levels of emotion. But I've witnessed that. I've seen that massive escalation to that point. And that matter, I'm not sure how it resolved in the end. I mean, he went to jail for a little while for some of the things he'd done.
Yep.
But it was the drug use, but then just that really high level of emotion within the domestic setting.
Yep.
So,
well, I think you said it once before. It's like I said, you basically, when you go to domestics, people are airing their dirty laundry, and you said, "Well, no, it's more actually like dirty knickers."
Oh, yeah.
Like you are literally, you know, you're going. It's so intimate, and the emotions are so high
and raw.
Yeah, very. Yeah,
you're dealing with very high levels of jealousy.
Yeah,
you're dealing with potentially very explosive, very emotional situations, and they have the potential to turn very bad very quick.
Yep.
And like you said before, you might attend a matter where you've gone, righto, we're taking you into custody for your protection. And said, no, I just wanted you to settle him down. I don't want you to arrest him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Too late. We're here now, and this is how we're going to act.
Exactly. Yep.
And then she turns on you, or he turns on. The other person goes, you're not taking her away or him away. So
that's right, yeah. I mean, I can remember a number of times where we've gone to a job and had to actually, take both of them in.
Yeah.
Because they just, they basically fought the police.
That's right.
They're the ones that called the police.
Yeah. But they didn't like the response. It's like, don't get your hand. And then it might even be that you're arresting someone and they resist a little bit.
Yep.
So you might have to put handcuffs on or put them on the ground or something.
Yeah.
And you've just assaulted their, for want of a better word, you've assaulted their intimate partner.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And then they defend their intimate partner against the police. Say, oh, no, it's a show.
It is. Yeah, that's right. And I think, like, that's also an important point. Like you've heard of like serious ones where people have been killed and all that sort of thing, and people, you know, the media go off, you know, why didn't the police do something and all this sort of thing. But you've got to remember that sometimes the victims allow that to happen as well because they get that emotion and they, you know, they think, oh, no, he's not too bad. And people get used to what they're used to. So if you suddenly separate them, even though they know they're bad for them, they feel comfortable around them because they know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, and that's why, I mean, anybody that's ever broken up, you suddenly miss the person.
The heartbreak.
And that's a similar situation where you've got two people and they're separated over domestic violence.
Yeah.
And you get that, emotion. They sit there and go, oh, you know, like there's been cases where there's a full non-contact order, like you said, and the victim goes, oh, no, I'll let you see the kids so the police don't actually know about this. And, you know, and I mean, that creates...
Well, it's a breach. It's a breach of the order.
Exactly,
If they never want to amend the order, they need to go to court.
So
I think the biggest one as well is that it's very, very easy to blame the police. The police are a big homogenous organisation that is just easily attacked by all sections of society. But they're also the only one that's held to a high level of account.
That's right.
So, like, the I remember it was a few years ago. It was bad, I can't remember. I think it was a lady had her son, Rose Batty.
Yes, that's the one. The one I was talking about where she allowed him
to have
access to the kid and that resulted terribly.
Yeah. So she had, I don't know the exact details, but I do remember hearing that she had, on a number of occasions, not provided evidence or withdrawn evidence once it had been given by the police. She is a person who has been extremely critical of police the whole way through.
Yep.
And it was like, remove emotion, get rid of them. And I know that's impossible to do, but if you remove emotion and be objective, like the court is, and like the law is, you can't allow emotion to, like, if she wants to withdraw it, she's an adult human being. And it's like, well, do you understand that we can help you here? Like, if you're doing this for any other reason, but the purity that you don't want this to occur.
Yep.
That's fine. But then down the track to come back and go, well, the police didn't do much to convince me to go the other way. Well, it's like, well, hang on. We're not. The other thing is we're very busy. We're going to lots and lots of these jobs. There are lots of victims and lots of offenders. Secondly, it's the, well, you told us to do this. You're an adult human being. And I know it's your victim blaming. Well, we're not really. We're saying that you have to take some level of responsibility.
That's right, yeah.
And assist the process.
Yep.
And that's really difficult.
It is,
and I understand that that's really difficult. And this is where the trouble lies in that, I get it. It's a really difficult thing to do, but we can't do anything else without your information.
That's right, exactly.
Your evidence is essential for a prosecution.
Yeah, exactly. And
if you need the protection, if you really do need protection from the state by means of a domestic violence or an AVO or DVO, then you need to cooperate with that a little bit as well.
Yeah.
And that's where a bit of criticism comes in. It's like the police were very cold about the way they dealt with it. It's like, yeah, well, we're not there to provide you with all the emotional support. We're there to provide you with an objective outcome.
Yeah.
There are other people who can provide emotional support and well-being and social work for you. But, it is an element of policing. And and it's good to incorporate that into the administration of justice.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, if 1 + 2 doesn't equal 3,
yep.
Well, sorry.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. That's what you end up with, isn't it? It's, and we also mentioned previously when we were talking about it before, the fact that you hear from the media, these terrible cases that go through and like you said, people, the public attack the police, so to speak, and, why didn't they do more? But if you think of the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of domestics that actually get taken care of.
Perfectly.
Exactly.
Yep.
Like I said, I was reviewing over 100 a week.
Yep.
And I can guarantee you, I actually can't recall one that wasn't done properly.
Yeah. I know that they do occur. We will never sit here and say police are perfect.
No, because you're dealing with humans. Humans make mistakes. That's a reality.
Yeah.
So, but I think people just need to understand that, it's a very small percentage. And of course, the problem is the media then blow up way out of proportion.
Yeah.
And everybody sits there and goes, oh, there was one recently where they're saying, oh, there's a problem with domestic violence in the police. Like their response to it. Well, no, there's not.
No. There's a problem in society with domestic violence.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But is it the police response? Well, look, certainly there are times when it's easy to criticise the police.
Yep.
But the trouble is it's very easy to criticise, but no one ever compliments or very rarely compliments.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot more difficult to compliment. And I saw a lot more success than I did failure, yes, especially in the circumstances.
Yeah.
Like we're dealing with pretty wild setups.
Yeah.
So I saw it work a lot better. Another example, and this might segue to another episode, I'm not sure, but people, every time there's a police shooting involving a mental health patient, people come out in the media really questioning why police are attending mental health matters.
Yeah.
The reason is because they're potentially very dangerous.
Yeah.
I've been to hundreds and hundreds of mental health issues.
Yeah.
And that might range from someone who's got a slight bit of depression and someone thinks he's just acting a bit strangely. And you get a bit of a chat and they're, I'm sorry to cause a disturbance, I'm just not having a very good day.
Yep.
Right through to someone well, actually taking their own life in front of you. That's never happened to me, but it's happened to other police officers. Yep. I know a job in Darwin, the tertiary response group.
You just brought back memories of some of the ones I've gone to.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
So, and especially as a negotiator, I had a lot to do with mental health issues.
Yep.
And I tell you what, the vast majority of the time, those matters were resolved through negotiation, through communication, and complemented well by mental health professionals who were at on the scene.
Yep.
The fact is, we've got a volatile situation where life and limb is potentially at risk. Therefore, there is police involved because it may need that force is required, and we're the ones who use force.
Yep.
So, people don't see the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of jobs that are resolved very well.
Yep.
They do see a job explode, and then they go, "Why the hell are police even going to mental health matters?" Mm. Well, they have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's like, well, I didn't see you there either.
Yeah.
But you've got a lot to say.
Yeah.
It's like, I know nothing about, what's a good example? Fencing.
Yeah.
I know what a fence is.
That's right.
I know different types of wire.
Yeah.
I know that posts go in the ground. I've been sort of showed how to do it.
Yeah.
But I know nothing about fencing.
Yeah, that's
I have
right.
no interest in fencing.
Yeah.
More to the point, I've got no opinion on how to do a build a fence.
Yeah.
If a fencing expert said to me, "Right, here's we're going to do this style of fence for this," I said, "That sounds good to me, but I have no idea."
Yeah.
What I wouldn't do is get on TV and criticise the fence maker after the fact. I would have done it like this, but you've never built a fence in your life.
That's right, exactly.
So, I don't know whether that's a good example or not.
Well, it is a good example.
But why didn't you just do that? Because that's not the rules. The fence has to be here, here, and here. Well, who made that rule up? Well, it doesn't matter who made it up. It's the rules. It's the policy of the fence department.
That's right. Well, I think, you know, one of my favourite memes I've seen on Facebook is an officer sitting there and he gets a call over the radio, you know, sitting there. There's a robbery in progress at 7-Eleven. And he turns around and goes, "Better jump on Facebook, see how I should handle this."
Yeah, see how the experts deal with it. But hang on, the experts aren't available because you've already stuffed it up and a week later they're going to come back and Monday morning quarterback it.
Well, and see, this is also the thing that people, and I think we've spoken about this before, we are judged in hindsight. So, you know, after the event, people always ask questions, how come this wasn't done? Mm. Well, you weren't there to make that decision at that time. So, you know, and unfortunately, errors do happen.
Yeah. So we used to joke about, it's not that it's funny, but police shootings. We'd go, well, how long did that police officer have to make that decision to pull his firearm and pull his or her firearm and shoot that person?
Yeah.
So in my view, the once the investigation's completed, should be put to the court and the judge has the same amount of time to adjudicate it.
Yeah, that's right.
And if they can't adjudicate it in the right amount of time, then the benefit of the doubt goes to the police officer.
That's right.
And look, I'm not saying that will ever happen, but it can be then very thoroughly broken down and looked at in a million different directions. And that all that information would have been wonderful if it was available to the police officer at the time.
Exactly, yeah.
But there's an old saying, and I saw it again recently, and we've always said it, but I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Definitely, yes.
So, yeah. So I know we started off obviously talking about domestic violence in this and explaining we're not here to talk about the pros and cons of domestic, the stats of domestic violence.
Yep.
We're purely talking about the practical dealings of police.
And I think it was a good way to get people to understand what actually happens behind the lines. You know, it's not as simple as sitting there going, you know, like man bad, woman good.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or it's not as simple as sitting there going, well, police should have just done, like, fixed it.
Yeah.
It's extremely complex. And I think what we'll do in future, we'll do other episodes of this podcast and we'll touch on DV as we talk about it and explain different parts of it. Because, like we said before, it's very, very complex. So we've got to do this in stages because it's very hard. Like the amount of information in my head surrounding domestics, it's amazing. It all fits up there, really. So, and I think we just need to, because I remember when you first actually said, you know, we should talk about domestics, and I was sitting there like going, how do you talk about it?
Where
like,
do you start?
It's just it's really, really hard because you've got to try and get all this information out. So I think what we're doing here is probably a good one.
Yeah, and look, this one might have been a bit drier than a few of the others.
Definitely, yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think we do need to sort of put that information across.
That's right.
But yeah, like we've been saying as well, if you give us feedback, what you want to hear about.
Yeah.
If you have a question about anything we talk about, let us know because we can talk. We're only a small organisation. There's two of us.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
and you can message us on Podbean.
Yeah.
So if you go on there, you can... you can send us a message, and a few people have already, you know, spoken about different things and what we talk about and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, we'll probably finish it up now.
Yeah.
Damo, what do you reckon?
Probably a few more laughs, I think, the next one.
I think so, definitely.
A bit heavy, this one. Yeah, that's all right. That is what it is. We have to talk about it.
It needs to be spoken about, doesn't it?
Not everything's beer and Skittles.
No. That's exactly right. No. Especially in the world of policing, mate.
No, exactly right.
So,
rightio.
All right. Well, we'll finish this one up and we'll be back again soon.
All the best.